our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Look, I agree. He's young, he's talented, he's probably going to be traded, so you have to buy low. That being said, this guy stinks. I'm sorry. We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The reason Avisel Garcia was traded off of the Tigers was he slept with Prince Fielder's wife.
Oh, at least he hit something. Hey-o!
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
How is Aaron Judge older than Gary Sanchez? Chuck, is there a GM that you don't want dead?
Could be figured that it's jealousy, because if somebody asked me, you know, what my dream job was, that's definitely what it would be.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 143 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on this episode is the full crew. We have Darius Austin, Eli Rosenzweig, and Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully, and you rightfully put me last, which I completely understand.
Well, I thought I would treat you like I did Mike on the last podcast, where I wouldn't talk to him because the Rays made trades for guys that I like out of the Giants farm system. But I figure at this point, I'm a little bit over it. It's been a few days. the Giants got, a good relief pitcher in Will Smith, who had a blow-up outing last night. I'm going to get over this because we're just going to win another World Series.
Yeah, that's quite possible. I really like the Matt Moore. I really like them getting Matt Moore. I'm far more dubious about Will Smith.
Yeah, I'm pretty dubious about all their moves in the last week and a half or whatever. But I'm a loyal fan. I'm going to believe in the process and looking forward to getting to touch another trophy before security runs me off in the spring. So also joining us is Eli Rosenzweig. Eli, how are you?
Yeah, whatever. I'm fine.
And we have Darius Austin. Darius, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm just watching Tom Kohler strike out Chris Bryant, which will bring joy to Chuck, no doubt.
Indeed.
Those are words I never thought I'd hear you say, but it's good to have you all on the program. Before we jump in, just want to remind everybody that we are sponsored by OfficialFantasyRings.com. OfficialFantasyRings.com is where you can go and get customized rings for your fantasy leagues. If you want to have some sort of prize for your fantasy league, but you don't want that big trophy or a championship belt that's hard to carry around and bring wherever you want to go, go to OfficialFantasyRings.com, get in a customized ring for your league, and then make everybody kiss your ring after you win the championship in your league. Use our promo code FWFB. And not only will you get 10% off at checkout, you will actually now get 20% off at checkout. A little bit of a extra bonus for our Friends of Fantasy Benefits listeners and fans. Use promo code FWFB and get 20% off at checkout. All right, let's jump right into the list of guys we're going to talk about, because we have a large list right now. And we'll start with Junior Guerra. And talk about Milwaukee Brewers, we always throw it to Chuck first. Chuck, tell me what you think of Junior Guerra so far this year and then moving forward.
Well, Junior Guerra is really an amazing story. He played in Italy, Venezuela, Mexico, just floated around the minors. Now he's a 31-year-old whose ERA is in the mid-2s. He's got a FIP that's 3.66. He's got a 1.04 whip. He walks a lot of guys, but he doesn't give up very many hits. He's only given up 74 hits in 103 innings pitched. The best batting average all year against his splitter in any month is 150. And people, hitters are whiffing on 20% of his pitches. He was the very first pickup by the Mr. Stearns, the new GM of the Brewers here recently, and he's paying huge dividends. He reminds me a lot of Matt Shoemaker, in so much as they're both relying heavily on a split-fingered pitch. That's kind of a novelty pitch at this point. But he really hasn't slowed down, and he's kind of done it in different ways each month. If you look at his pitch usage and how people are doing against him, he's really sort of adjusted to the league as he's gone along. And I'm starting to feel like there's some staying power here.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Junior Guerra?
I feel like you should have thrown it to me first, since he's a former White Sox.
Ah, there we go.
Yes.
Well, he didn't really do much with the White Sox.
Hey, four glorious innings in 2015, all right? I tend to, like, I trust the White Sox with pitching. So when they, he was good in the minors in 2015 for them, but it's, you know, it's Junior Guerra. He's been at organized major league, minor league baseball for a while now. I figured that this guy was pretty much garbage. The White Sox got rid of him. But turned out the White Sox were wrong. He's obviously pretty useful. I do feel like the Brewers probably should have traded him, but maybe no one was going to give him enough for him. But, I mean, yeah, you got to like the hits allowed, and he's only allowed 9 homers. The strikeouts are solid. Does anyone, like, truly buy this?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. His strand rate's really high. His ground ball rate is pretty good, I guess. I don't know. It's a bad team. He's old.
This is a bad part.
This is a fluke. I mean, ride him while you can, because, like, kind of like the Brewers, like, no one probably wanted him, and they weren't going to get enough to get him. So may as well ride him while he's solid, but I don't think it's going to last.
Yeah, I don't think it can last at this rate. I mean, if you look at his FIP and XFIP, they're marketably higher than his ERA. So you've got to think that there's probably a correction coming. Here's what he has kind of on his, kind of in the good column, though. One, considering he hasn't pitched a ton, at least for major league organizations, in the last decade, you would venture to think that maybe he has a few more bullets in his gun than the typical 31, 32-year-old. So maybe that is a little bit better for him. And because he hasn't pitched for a ton of major league organizations in the past 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, there's not a ton of a book on him. Now teams are starting to get a book on him because he's got 103 innings in the major leagues this year. But I think that has helped him along. I think there's a course correction coming, but I like what we see from him. Decent fastball. I do love the splitter. Can strike guys out. But I just don't buy he's like a sub-3 ERA guy. I think he's more of a 3.5, 3.7 kind of ERA guy, and I think that's where the course of correction will come at some point, especially pitching in Milwaukee, which, one, he's not going to get a ton of wins to begin with, so if you're in a wins league, there's going to be a little bit of a struggle. And two, I mean, that park can be deadly for pitching at times.
I feel like this is the kind of guy that if he pitches in the American League, he's got like a 4.3 ERA, and the fact that I know that Milwaukee's not a great place to pitch, but it's just so advantageous to pitch in the National League that if this guy got moved to the AL, it'd be kind of a joke.
I think there's maybe a little bit of truth to that. I don't know if I'd quite go that far.
Yeah, maybe the joke was too strong. But
yeah, but because, I mean, he's definitely a guy that is pitching in a bad park in a tough division. I mean, the NL Central is not an easy division to pitch in. You know, especially if you don't get to pitch against the Brewers. So I think he's a guy that he'll have a course correction. It may not be horrific, but there's no way he's pitching sub three ERA rest of the way. Darius, what are your thoughts on Guerra?
I agree with that. I think I tend a little bit more towards Chuck than you guys maybe on the optimism. I like what he's done. The pitch mix seems good. He's got a pretty good swing and strike rate, good pop-up rate as well. So I think maybe while the BABIP is not going to stay as low as it is, I think he can probably run a slightly lower than average BABIP. On one hand, the fact that he hasn't really pitched, I think it was difficult to see from because he's pitched all over the place, but I don't think he's ever really thrown more than 150 innings. So on one hand, obviously, I think that's quite good for him, even though he's 31. I don't think there's a huge amount of mileage on that arm. And I believe he came up as a catcher initially. On the other hand, that means I think he's about 20 innings away from pitching the most he ever has. So I do wonder what will happen to him maybe in September. If you are looking for him to help you down the stretch, you might be sort of entering the unknown there because I don't think he's ever really had a season where he's pitched certainly at this kind of level before. So I'm reasonably optimistic about, as you know, for a 31-year-old who's never really pitched in the majors before, I have quite a positive outlook, and I think he's, you know, maybe a 4 or 5 on a fantasy staff going into next season. So yeah, I think I'm more on Chuck's end of the scale than you guys.
Is anybody worried, and I mean, oh, I'll start with Chuck on this one, that the loss of Lucroy may impact this pitching staff negatively? Chuck, any thoughts there?
I'm actually not worried, which you make a really good point, but actually Maldonado, their backup catcher, who seems to be getting the first chance to start, which I don't know if that'll work or not, but Maldonado is an excellent, excellent defensive catcher. His problem is definitely with the bat, and he's worked with the staff for a long time. And he's really good at throwing out base runners. So all those things I like. I also want to mention to Eli that, you know, Guerra ventures into small sample size, of course, but he's got a 2.23 ERA at home, and his ERA is over 3 on the road. So he's actually been better at home this year.
Anybody else afraid of Maldonado at catcher, or even Susek when he comes up, or are you guys not worried about the departure of Lucroy?
I think it's a factor. I mean, Lucroy is a great defensive catcher. He's more familiar with Guerra, and I also think that we underrate the importance of a good catcher for a pitcher. So I absolutely think it's a factor. But I think the Guerra struggles the rest of the way is probably going to be more due to the fact that it's Junior Guerra than the catcher.
Harsh. He's harsh.
I'm just mad that he didn't do this with the White Sox, I guess.
Lucroy's framing numbers have actually been tailing off the last couple of years. He's kind of just rating about average at the moment. So I think it maybe is less of an impact than it would have been. The other thing is Guerra's really not been working with him for that long. So it doesn't concern me a huge amount. You know, maybe he will find himself working with Susek a lot. And I don't think Susek is a bad defensive catcher by any means. So I'm not hugely worried about it, no.
Yeah, I agree kind of with Darius. I think, you know, if he has any issues with Maldonado, maybe he works with Susek. Susek has gotten to work under one of the best catchers in the business in Posey.
Not really. Susek's always in AAA, so.
Well, he got to spend quite a bit of time last season with Posey, so I'm not worried about Susek. I actually think this is a great move for Susek as an underrated guy to look at towards the end of the season if you're in an NL only. Especially in a 2-catcher NL only. So let's go ahead and move on over to Aaron Sanchez. Aaron Sanchez is going to be transitioned to the bullpen after 1 or 2 more starts. So, I mean, in terms of fantasy value for this year, unless you're in holds leagues, he's probably losing all of his value. So here is my question to you guys. What is Aaron Sanchez's value for next year? Darius?
Eli and I talked about Sanchez a bit while you guys were away, and I think we ended up pretty high on him. I'm sort of looking at him round about maybe in the 25 to 30 range in a dynasty league. So I'm pretty optimistic about him going forward. I think his improvements this season are legitimate, and he can continue those and maybe even improve a bit. I saw a comp somewhere that the way he's put his success together is not unlike Roy Halladay early in his career. So I'm pretty confident that Sanchez is, despite being shut down this year, I think he'll get a much more extended leash next year, and hopefully will be sort of, you know, 190, 200 innings of maybe a number 2 starter in fantasy league.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Sanchez for next year?
Man, just listen to the goddamn podcast that me and Chuck had, all right? I mean, me and Darius had. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I love Aaron Sanchez. I do wish he'd pick up the strikeouts just a little bit, but he's really limited his walks the second half of this season. It's really good to see. It's impressive that he's only allowed 10 homers, and especially pitching in Toronto in the American League in a really tough division. So I think there's a lot to like, and he's made a ton of strides this year in his first like kind of full stint as a starter. So I think you got to expect more of the same next year, and he could get even better now that he's added a reliable third pitch. So I'm really high on this guy.
Chuck, thoughts on Sanchez for next year?
Well, it's hard not to like what Sanchez has done. I mean, he's leading the American League in ERA, or is a stat that I heard recently. You know, I looked at him more as his overall value because I wanted to understand him a little bit more. And I have a tendency to compare him and think that he is what we hoped Marcus Stroman would be, because they're both sinker ball pitchers. You know, and I also find it very interesting that Aaron Sanchez's best month of the season is the month where he had his lowest K rate, which really kind of makes some sense because these sinker ballers really pitched with the idea of putting the ball in play. So the only true thing I see maybe regressing some is I wonder if his K rate will be very steady going forward. Maybe he can rely more on his other pitches than a true sinker baller. And so maybe his K rate will spike some here when he's using his four seamer more. I just wouldn't count on K's going forward. And to me, that's the only thing that sort of keeps him out of the top 20 next year for starting pitchers to start the season.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chuck, in terms of his K rate kind of keeping him outside of the top 20, though I think he is in the 20 to 30 range. He went, at a fairly decent spot in our three-sport draft that we refer to a lot because, you know, there's not many other drafts and ADPs to go off of right now for next season. I liked Aaron Sanchez coming into the season. He was a guy I was really high on. I'm probably going to be pretty high on him next season because a lot of what I thought might happen kind of came to fruition. I'm really impressed by his ability to limit the homers and limit the walks this season. And I think this is a future stud. I mean, he's still fairly young. This is one of the reasons why when we talk about prospects, that you shouldn't give up on some of these guys if they struggle early on. Like, this was a guy who was considered one of the best prospects in baseball a few years ago, and then people got prospect fatigue because he wasn't getting to the majors quick enough. When he got to the majors, he wasn't very good. He got moved into the bullpen, and people got scared away from him. These kind of guys can make it, especially pitching prospects who can sometimes take a little bit longer to develop. Let's go ahead and move over and talk about Anthony Rendon and in kind of his season. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Anthony Rendon so far this year and kind of moving forward throughout the rest of this year?
Well, I guess I'm wondering if because he hasn't had the batting average year that people thought he was probably going to have, and last year was injury marred, I'm wondering if he's somebody who might fall through the cracks a little bit and not get the credit he deserves for being a compiler of statistics. I mean, his counting stats are really good. He's got 13 home runs and 12 stolen bases, albeit he got caught six times. He's also hot as a pistol right now. He's hitting .328 with four home runs since the All-Star break. You know, I think with him cutting down to just third base eligibility being fairly likely next season, it just seems to me like he's somebody who might fall through the cracks and go later than he should next year in drafts.
What are your thoughts, Darius, on Anthony Rendon? I think being only third base, you said being only third base eligible is going to make him fall through the cracks. I would prefer him at second. At 30, he isn't as sexy, but Darius, what are your thoughts on him for the rest of this year and then moving forward?
I like that he's running again. That was one of my big concerns after last season, that the Steelers went away. He had that knee problem, obviously. And I was concerned that they weren't ever really going to get back to the double digits, which was a nice part of his value. Somebody, Corinne Landry at Fangraphs, did a nice piece about how he's been much more selective. He's going after pitches low and inside, and he's staying off things high and away where he's not a very good hitter. He's been much better at that this year. So I think this sort of recent hot streak is pretty sustainable. It's just an issue of he's not really going to be in that top tier of third baseman because that top tier of third baseman is so good now. So I think he's a nice, you know, sort of solid guy. Maybe he's number six or seven in those rankings. And, you know, based on this year's steals, then he can potentially be a 2020 guy going forward. But I think it's just those elite third basemen that may make him look as not quite as an attractive option, which if it makes him fall an extra round or two is great.
Eli, thoughts on Rendon rest of the way and then moving forward?
Yeah, I think I was critical on Rendon earlier in the year. I thought that he was never going to come mildly close to what he did in 2014 and also, of course, the injury concerns. But, you know, he's really impressed me. The walk rate is actually 3% higher now than it was during his breakout year a couple seasons ago. The BABIP could actually come up a little bit. I could see him hitting closer to 275 the rest of the way and next year. I never thought the speed would return based on the knee injury, but that seems to have come back. I think the Nationals offense could be pretty good next year, so you got to think I'll take a third baseman that can hit 20 homers, steal 15 bags, and give you a solid amount of runs and RBIs without hurting your average. So I really like him the rest of the way, and it'd be nice to have second base eligibility next year, but you know, third, it's not like third is crazy deep. He's still going to be very solid and a clear starter for your fantasy team. So I'm a big fan now.
It feels like to me, though, that and I haven't really like started doing rankings or anything for next year. But
you did. I mean, you must have had some type of rankings for the three sport draft.
I literally went off top of my head in baseball.
Well, no wonder why you suck so bad.
And no wonder why I miss guys. It feels like to me, and you know, I'll just go over to the ESPN player rater and kind of look at second base. It feels like second base can be extremely shallow, like we've kind of experienced in the past for shortstop.
I feel
where
like
a shortstop is going to be really deep.
I feel like second and third are about the same these days in terms of how many people you can count on.
I don't know. I mean, third base, I guess there's just kind of a big drop off after maybe like the top 6 to 8. So if you don't get one of your guys, I mean, I love Rendon. I love his skill set. I was extremely high on him last year, and that paid off really awfully. And I was fairly decently high on him this year. I think the thing that people are always going to have to remember is, you know, after he comes off a good campaign like he did this year, is that there is a huge injury risk with him. And you just have to kind of keep that in mind, that you have to be able to survive without him, because there's a large chance that you may miss him at some point, because he does have such a huge injury history dating back to college. One of the reasons why he wasn't taken first overall in the draft when he came out. So I like him for next year. I think he could be a tad underrated, but he won't be a guy that I'm necessarily targeting a ton, because I will be afraid of the injury issues.
Well, the question will be, is he protected more from injury if he plays only third base? Which, as many moving parts as they've had this year, and with Trey Turner being in the mix, I think, you know, that it's a viable question. I'm not sure that's true, but he does avoid all the collisions at second base and what have you. And I think it's kind of a tip of the cap from the Nationals that they know they have to try and keep him healthy.
All right, well, before we move on to the next guy, let's just do a quick would you rather with Anthony Rendon. Let's kind of see where he falls in for next season. Would you rather Anthony Rendon or Kyle Seager?
Seager.
I think I'm going Seager too, just because you know what you're going to get, and Rendon, you have no idea. I mean, really.
I'll go Seager too.
Yeah, I get if you need seals, maybe Rendon gets a slight edge. It's close either way. So,
I also think if it's a deeper league, I might prefer Seager, because it's easier to pick somebody up, you know, if Rendon gets hurt. And I have much more concern about that with him than Seager.
Rendon or Todd Frazier? Who is hitting .212 on the season.
Well, you know what? Frazier's one spot ahead of Rendon in the player radar. So
I know, that's
it.
That's why I picked him.
I'll still take Frazier, because I think the average will come up and the power is so much greater.
Yeah.
I'll take Frazier too, but I can't stand uneven players like Frazier. They drive me insane.
Rendon or Jake Lamb?
Lamb.
Yeah, Lamb looks really good.
Yeah, I'm going Lamb too.
Yeah, I have to go Lamb, but I'm a little concerned that, you know, now he's had a good half season and he's dinged up right now. You know, I own him in the three sport league, and so maybe that's where the frustration comes in already, even though I don't have to worry about it till next year.
Rendon, or really seems like a stupid question, but it isn't, Eduardo Nunez. He's the number three third baseman ahead of Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, and Manny Machado on the ESPN Player Rater.
Fantasy baseball is dumb.
Well, they do overvalue stolen bases a bit, but stolen bases have an added value in our system nowadays.
I'll take Rendon.
I'm going to take Rendon too, but it is way closer than it should be.
Yep.
But for the record, I'm the only human on the planet that would take Hernan Perez over Anthony Rendon. So there you go.
Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, man, that guy's on fire.
Yeah, we should. We're going to talk about him next week, I think, because, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous what Hernan Perez is doing. Let's move over and talk about Edwin Diaz, the new closer of the Seattle Mariners. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Edwin Diaz? Because he has been fantastic in terms of his season so far and his career so far. But looking on to next year, is he the closer, and where would he rank in the closer ranks if he is?
Well, he's got a really, he's got this incredibly sterling stat line, except sort of for one thing. You know, he's only given up 8 bases on balls, but his WHIP is still 1.27, you know, which is really odd. So he's given up a hit per innings. He's given up a lot of hits, a ton of hits for a guy who's as overpowering as he is, which, of course, at some point, you know, the good thing about giving up walks is that all the runners only move up one base. You know, and obviously with, you know, 1.73 ERA, it hasn't hurt him much this year. You know, I think he's just 22 years old. Seattle has been very goofy at how they approach their bullpen in recent years. You know, not giving guys chances after they finish the year really solid. Farquhar comes to mind a couple years ago. So I think that's going to hurt where you rank him next year. I think he's going to be somewhere between 10 and 13 next year. And I think it's going to be more because of Seattle than anything he's done, but also that he's got a really limited track record no matter what.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Diaz moving forward for next year?
Higher than that. If he continues to do what he's doing, it doesn't have to go quite this extreme. But as long as he doesn't implode or blow up or anything like that, I think he's more of like the top 7 kind of guy. I mean, Seattle's going to be a good team next year, so they're going to get plenty of save chances. The strikeouts are insane. My favorite stat isn't even the 18 strikeouts per nine. It's the 97.4% left on base percentage.
Paired with his BABIP. Look at his BABIP.
Oh, my God. 458. This is insane. I love this guy. He had value. He had so much value before he got the closer job. So I always stash high strikeout relievers on my team, and a lot of times they end up getting closer jobs. So I had this guy a bunch of places. I'm obsessed with him. I see no reason why he's going to lose the job for next year. So I think you got to think he's an elite closer next year.
I think there is a chance he could lose the job for next year, and it's not because somebody is better than him. I think there is a real possibility the Mariners will attempt to transition him into a starter.
Well, I was just going to ask about that because, I mean, until a couple of months ago, they were still talking.
That was the plan. The plan was he was going to come in, he was going to pitch out of the bullpen this year, and next season move into the starter role. Now, I mean, there is the caveat that in you know, the current era, and by era I mean like the last 2 or 3 seasons of Major League Baseball, Major League clubs are putting a huge emphasis on their bullpen. I mean, we're seeing it all over the place. We saw it with the Andrew Miller trade. We saw it with the Kansas City has been doing with their bullpen for years. You're seeing it all over baseball that these teams want to have lights out bullpens. So maybe that changes the mind. They go, well, this guy's been so good in the bullpen. This is very similar to Roberto Osuna. Like, he's been so great in the bullpen, then why are we going to even worry about transitioning him out, especially with the price of relief pitching right now? But I think there is a chance that they could just decide, hey, we get more value from a starting pitcher. Let's transition him in and see what's going to happen. That's why I would be okay with selling him right now. First of all, I don't put a high premium on relief pitching in terms of keeper and dynasty leagues. But secondly, I don't think it's a guaranteed lock that he is even the closer next season.
I think that we've seen way too many examples of prospects who get put in the closer role who dominate that never get moved back. This, like you mentioned Osuna, you also got...
But for every guy like that, you see the Neftali Felizes who move back and forth. And then you see guys like Carlos Martinez, who is now a premier starter. So, I mean, teams are going to try to do it because, at least up until the last maybe 2 years, it's been very hard to find pay for starters and not very hard to pay for relievers. Now, the current era may change that a tad, and that would be the reason they wouldn't. But conventional wisdom and history shows that the teams would rather have a starter than a lights out reliever.
I think the team concept is what we're leaving out of this argument so far, in so much as pretty much every starter on Seattle has been disappointing, meaning that I think they're going to need a starter. And I think that's a factor. I mean, Iwakuma has had a really bad year for him. Obviously, King Felix is in trouble of never being called King again. This Nate Karns experiment has failed miserably. He's finally going to start again. Wade Miley got traded. Nobody knows what you're getting out of Paxton or Taiwan Walker. So I think that increases the chances that he gets moved into the rotation.
Darius, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Chuck on that. There's not a whole lot in the Mariners system either, and I'm pretty sure Diaz was number one on most prospect lists for the team coming into the year. So I find it unlikely that, you know, just having a couple of months of him being a lights-out closer is going to be enough for them to say, well, we're giving up on him being a starter. So I definitely could see them, you know, going into spring training next year, we'll at least be trying him out in the rotation, and maybe if it does go bad, then we'll see him back in the closer role in the future. But I think for now, you've got to hope for a couple of months of great saves and strikeouts, and then maybe, even see if you can send him off to somebody as a top-tier closer before they switch him back to the rotation.
I just remembered that Wade LeBlanc started for him last night, by the way. That's a statement, just saying.
I think Eli called him Matt LeBlanc.
I did, yes.
All right, let's move on and talk about Irvin Santana, who's pitched fairly well, I believe, in his last couple starts. Eli, what are your thoughts on Irvin Santana as a guy in deeper leagues?
Yeah, he's a good guy to have at the back end of your rotation in deeper leagues and AL. He's obviously not a big strikeout guy. He's not on a great team. He's not going to get a lot of wins, but he's definitely got more value in a quality start league. He just goes out there, gives you six innings, gives up a couple runs. He just doesn't walk anyone, which is why he's able to get by with the declining stuff. He's still pretty solid and reliable. He's not going to hurt you in any places. He's not going to really help you a lot in any places, but you know those kind of guys do have value in deep leagues. So you know he's a pretty reasonable guy to have.
And he's a guy, too, in your deeper formats, especially like NL only, that could get traded at some point. So if he got traded over to the NL, you lost out on maybe some of the bigger names in Rich Hill and Reddick that came over to the National League. He's a guy that could still get traded after the kind of the post-trade deadline waiver period. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. Darius, what are your thoughts on Irvin Santana moving forward?
Yeah, I think he's just a very solid guy, really. He's been pretty consistent for a few years now. He's not going to get you the massive amount of strikeouts, but like Eli said, his walk rate is nice. And he's just a fairly solid back-of-the-rotation pitcher that can anchor your staff without doing anything too flashy. So especially in quality start league, yeah, very nice to have there, just sort of giving you a few here and there. He's not going to excite anybody, but he's a very useful player to have in deeper leagues, I think.
Chuck, thoughts on Irvin Santana moving forward?
Well, I'm going to differ for sure. You know, the thing is I don't like to have my team, my end of the rotation guys. I like to be guys who strike people out. So if they're going through a rough stretch, at least I'm hoping to pick up, you know, 6, 7, 8 strikeouts. I mean, I really don't like how uneven his season has been this year. You know, he's got a 1.9 ERA, and he had a 1.9 ERA in July in 42 innings. Well, he had 2 months previous to that, one with a 4.89 ERA and one with a ERA over 5.2. You know, he's 33 years old, so I see limited upside. I mean, I understand what you guys are saying about deeper leagues when you need, you know, stabilizers, you know, guys at the back of your rotation. But if, you know, if I could roll the dice on Sean Manaea or anybody who's, you know, anybody who I think has some serious upside and will be striking people out along the way, I would just prefer them to Big Irv at this point. It's just not the kind of person, not the kind of pitcher I like to fill out a staff with.
He's one of those guys, though, that is totally dependent on your team construct. I mean, if you have the strikeout guys at the top of your rotation, then you don't need him. He's just a stabilizing force, someone that gives you innings and kind of pad stats. But if you need the upside, yeah. But, I mean, if you're in an AL-only league, right now. You may not want the guy who could have blow up potential and ruin your ratios towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't think there's no format in the history of mankind where I would rather have Irvin Santana next year than even Junior Guerra. So,
next year. I mean, I'm talking about just as a stretch run guy, cheap stretch run guy, rest of the way.
I mean, I can see riding him while he's hot, but I'd be pretty concerned that, you know, also you got to worry a little bit. I mean, if you need to shoot for the moon, so be it, but you got to be a little worried about a guy who's, you know, got back-to-back months where his ERA is around 5, too.
Well, he's also not allowed more than 2 earned runs since June 14th.
Yeah, I mean, he pitches in a good ballpark. I mean, he's had some really good stretches in his career. Like I said, it's just the 33-year-old who doesn't strike people out is sort of something I try to stay away from. They end up like Jake Peavy in the bullpen.
Thanks for that one. Let's move on to someone who's a little bit more exciting. Aaron Althea has come off of the disabled list. He was on the 60-day DL. He's missed the entire season up until this point, and has come out on just absolutely on fire. In 5 games, he has 2 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 8 RBIs, I believe 5 of which came last night in the game against San Francisco. I mean, single-handedly beat him. Is slashing .333, .455, .667. Darius, what are your thoughts on Aaron Althea moving forward?
Well, one of the things you might be worried about with him coming off this wrist injury is that he wouldn't hit for power straight away, so I think we can stop worrying about that already with the 2 homers straight away. He had a really nice power-speed combo in his brief playing time last season. I think it was about 150 plate appearances. He hit 5 homers and stole 6 bases, did similar kind of thing in the minors. So I definitely think there's potential there for quite a nice across-the-board contributor who should get some playing time in Philadelphia coming up. The main concern for me is that we just haven't seen that much of him in the majors. We're still under 200 plate appearances for him. I know that there was some concern about his contact ability prior to him coming up, and he was always kind of a toolsy guy who never really sort of achieved his full potential in the minors. So I'd like to see a bit more before I buy in completely, but there's certainly the package here to really be a nice fantasy outfielder.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that could be really valuable in deeper formats rest of the way. I'm probably not yet picking him up in 12-team or smaller, anything like that. But anything larger in 12 teams, I think I'm willing to take a shot on him. What he showed last year in a limited kind of sample at the major league level was that he offers power, speed, walks a decent amount. He does strike out too much. Darius is right. There is some concern to the fact that he won't make enough contact. But the Phillies are going to give him a ton of run here. I mean, he is going to play every day for the rest of the season so they can see what they have in him at the major league level. So I think this is a guy, if you're in a 15-team league or for some reason he's still available in your NL only, that I would go out and pick up because you're going to get a ton of at-bats and plate appearances from this guy, and he's going to have some value rest of the way in terms of counting stats. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Aaron Althea?
Well, I won't take too much time. I'll just say that when I've seen him play recently, he really surprised me how fast, how quick he looks on the field. I guess I wasn't expecting that much potential speed of him. So I think there's some stolen base upside. 481 OBP in the minors this year. I mean, you know, granted it's only, you know, it's been limited because of him being hurt a lot of the year. But hopefully the Cody Ashe experiment is over and we can spend some time figuring out what we have in Aaron Althea.
Eli, thoughts on Aaron Althea?
Man, I am all over players born in Germany these days. We're going to talk about another one later. I'm a big Althea fan. Like you guys said, he's going to get a ton of run in Philly. They're in kind of rebuild mode, and he's one of their younger talents that's pretty good. And I think he's in a full season. He's a guy capable of 2020. And I do think the Philly offense is going to be a little bit better next year. I think it's going to be okay. And I think he's a guy that can come close to that 2020 with a fair amount of runs and RBIs. Yeah, his average might not be good, but it's not going to be murderous, I don't think. And like Justin said, he walks a fair amount too, so that's also good for his fantasy value. So I'm a big fan. I definitely think he's You have to add him in 14 teams. I consider it in 12 teams if you need a boost in steals. So I'm really excited about his future.
All right, let's move on to Kendall Graverman, who is a guy that I thought would be better this season. Has looked he looked decent in his last start, I believe. He looked okay in his last start. Is he a guy that is worth investing in for the rest of this year if you're struggling in starting pitching, Chuck?
Again, we're going to kind of run into what we ran into before. I mean, he's a younger version, obviously, but 5.7 Ks per nine is way outside of the zone of what I usually look at. I'm also sort of a slave to whip numbers, which I guess, you know, can hurt you if you don't consider BABIP sometimes, but 1.38 whip and 5.7 Ks per nine. Now, even when he won four of his last five games, he only reached five strikeouts once in that stretch. I don't know. I find him to be somebody. I don't really trust the A's for anything. I don't even trust them with their own sewage systems in their own stadium. So,
well, you really shouldn't, given their history.
So I think Kendall Graveman is one of those guys that if somebody's getting some mileage against me, you know, in fantasy out of Kendall Graveman, I'll wait for the smoke and mirrors to stop and be done with it.
Yeah, he's had a quality start in each of his last five starts. Eli, is this a guy worth buying in on, or are you more in Chuck's line of thinking?
Yeah, I'm with Chuck on this one. And not because I'm biased against Billy Bean like Chuck is. But, yeah, I mean, I like him as a real-life pitcher, like a back-end guy, a depth piece. But in terms of fantasy, no. He doesn't strike anyone out. He's on a garbage team. The only reason why he's somewhat viable is because he pitches in that ballpark, which is anyone could pitch in. I like the ground ball rate. It's really good, 52%. That's fantastic. But he's just not going to get you wins. He's not going to get you strikeouts. He's going to have occasional blow up starts. No.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Graveman moving forward?
I think that there's potential here for more in the future, but I think the rest of the way, yeah, the strikeouts are too low for him to really be of any interest. It's not even like he's getting seven. Like Chuck mentioned, that 5.7 is, you know, just too low to really offer you any upside at all. I do like the ground ball rate that Eli mentioned, and I think it's got an interesting collection of pitches that if he could sort of figure out how to utilize better, then he might be a really interesting option in the future. But for now, I don't think there's a whole lot here for fantasy.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you guys. I think he's kind of a streamer guy in like a head-to-head categories league where you're just trying to, you know, take a shot at the end of a week, maybe to, you know, rack up a couple extra strikeouts or, you know, a couple extra innings, something like that. But I just think the upside's so low outside of American League only, he has no real value. And even there, he doesn't offer enough upside to really give you a whole lot. Let's move into some guys that are going to have a ton of upside, but the question becomes not what is their value for 2017, but what is their value for the rest of this year, and are they worth picking up? Because I had a disagreement with Matt, our prospect guy, on their value moving forward for this year. Orlando Arcia and Benintendi both getting the call-up this week. Benintendi a little bit surprising in terms of how quickly he's come up because he's skipping AAA. Chuck, what are your thoughts on these guys rest of this year?
Well, my thoughts on them is that you're really we have such opposite contexts within the two players. You know, Benintendi is coming up right after Bregman, you know, sort of to play the outfield, et cetera, the athletic type guy who's ripping up the minors. And Bregman has done absolutely nothing. And Benintendi, of course, is moving into this contending team, really the only hole on the diamond that they have. So, you know, in years past, you'd jump right on him, but I think there's so much prospect fatigue league-wide that I think you're going to see, you're going to see some reluctance when it comes to picking him up. As far as Orlando Arcia is concerned, I mean, he's a defensive wizard whose numbers are really not very impressive considering he was playing at Colorado Springs this year. But the last defensive wizard who had average numbers in the minors turned out to be Francisco Lindor. So I think you're going to see these players kind of reacted to differently. You know, if there's a need at shortstop, there's usually not a lot out there on the waiver wires by this point in the season. So you're going to see Orlando Arcia picked up and played more regularly than Benintendi. And my guess is that, Arcia is going to compile more statistics and what have you than Benintendi because he's already supposed to platoon.
Eli, what are your thoughts on these two guys moving forward for this year?
I really like Arcia, obviously more long-term. But in terms of this year, I think if you have a need at shortstop, I'd pick him up in 14-team leagues for sure. I think he can get you a handful of steals. He's got a little bit of pop. He never strikes out for the most part, so I think he's going to hit a decent average. He's got a lot of speed. Obviously, where did he play in the order last night?
I watched the game, so I should know, shouldn't I?
How do you not know this? This is the best prospect you've had in years. Get out of here.
He definitely hit towards the bottom of the lineup. He didn't hit towards the top.
Well, obviously,
but I couldn't tell you if it was sixth or seventh or eighth, but it was in the bottom of the lineup.
Well, shame, Chuck. Anyway, 14-team leagues, I'm picking him up, especially if you need steals. I think he's really solid. Benintendi, obviously I love the ballpark. I love the lineup. He could be pretty special, but he's already platooning. That's not great. I do think if he hits off the bat, though, that he's going to get a lot of playing time. But I think it's kind of risky. If you need to make up some ground and get hit lightning in a bottle, then just shoot, go for it. But if your team's steady, then probably not.
Yeah, it looks like he hit, 3-6. It looks like he hit 7th or 8th. It's hard to tell with the amount of pitch hitters and double switching they did.
He hit 7th.
Okay, so he hit 7th last night. I am a little bit... I'm very reluctant on both these guys. First of all, we'll start with Arcia. Like Chuck said, he hasn't been great, at least offensively in the minor leagues this year. I think he offers some stolen base upside if that's what you need, and you're really struggling at shortstop. But as we've kind of talked about over the course of the last month, shortstop isn't as bad as in years past. This isn't a position that most people are struggling at this year.
I feel like Arcia is like kind of, couldn't he be somewhat similar to Elvis Andrus the rest of the way? Maybe a little bit of a poor man's Andrus, but like I know people shit on Andrus, but he's still pretty valuable.
He's solid.
Fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, unless you're like, I picked up Arcia in a 20-team league where I was rolling out Starlin Castro at shortstop. And I was able to then throw Castro kind of onto my bench as a guy who can play second and short in that league. But, I mean, outside of really deep leagues, I don't think Arcia has enough upside to warrant throwing him into your lineup on a regular basis. And then Benintendi, I hate when guys skip triple A. And I think, Chuck talks about prospect fatigue. And I just don't think we're seeing that necessarily until guys flame out. I think what happens with prospect fatigue typically is what I talked about earlier in when guys fail. When guys come up, they don't do well, they go back down, then people start getting a little bit fatigued by it. But, I mean, the insane overvaluing of prospects, Benintendi was already owned in a number of leagues I'm in. And I play in deeper formats, but still, there was no rationale that this guy was coming up this year. I mean, this kind of came out of left field that he was going to be up and be up this early. I figured if he came up at all, it would be a September type thing. I think people are overzealous. The reason for me to pick up these guys right now is to trade them off to these people who are insane about prospects. That's the only reason I'd be willing to grab either of these guys.
Well, now that we're talking about Red Sox prospects real quick, do we think Mankata could come up in a week or so? Because Hanley got hurt. I don't think he had some like fluke accident where he hurt his wrist. We don't know the extent of the injury yet, but what if he were to get hurt? They could move Shaw to first and maybe put Mankata at third. And apparently Mankata's been practicing a bunch at third lately. He hasn't gotten into a game yet, but he's been taking a ton of ground balls over there. Do we think in about a week or two, if Hanley goes on the DL, Mankata comes up?
I think there's a strong possibility that he could come up. And the GM of the Red Sox today discussed that possibility, that they're reevaluating him because of how an advanced hitter he is. So I think there is a chance. I don't know if I would stash him in anything other than, you know, a 15 team or deeper league, AL only. But if you're in a league where these kind of guys are popular, you might want to just grab them right now and stash them if you can. Darius, what are your thoughts on these two guys?
I really like Benintendi. I'm impressed with everything he's done so far. And everything I see and read about him suggests that people think he can be a quality major league hitter straight away. I think there's a bit of a question on the power front just as to whether he's going to be kind of a 20-homer guy or maybe more in that sort of 15 range. But he's basically not failed at all, which might be a concern to some, but I also think is a testament to how good he is. The other thing I like is that he hasn't really been striking out at all at any of the levels he's been at. And I did a thing last year for the site where I looked at sort of strikeout rates in the minors and how those players translate to the majors. And the ones who struck out the least were always the best at translating their lines. So I'm fairly confident that he's going to be a good producer right away. Whether he's the kind of guy who can give you a huge jolt down the stretch is a different matter, because I don't think he's going to be like a, you know, he's not going to be a 30 steal guy or a 25 homer guy. So I don't think there's like one category where you can point to and say that he's going to give you a huge boost. And there are, he obviously didn't start last night either, so it's unclear as to how often they're going to play him, at least initially. But I'm more confident about him than Arcia, I think. Arcia is obviously a great player, but I think a lot of the value there is tied up in the defense. And I think at his best, he's maybe like double-digit homers with 20 steals, and that might be a few years down the line anyway. So I don't know how much you're really going to get out of him that you can't get out of another free agent shortstop on the wire.
All right, let's move over and talk about two other prospects who aren't up yet, but recently
Sanchez is up.
Oh, did they actually bring up Sanchez since I wrote this up?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so Sanchez is up. Aaron Judge is reported will be up in September. I believe he is still coming back from an injury.
He's back now.
Oh, he's back now. Okay. I'm glad I'm really on top of all this. what are your thoughts on these two Yankees prospects in terms of an impact rest of the way, Eli?
Not impressed. Look, there's a lot to love about Aaron Judge. He's really talented. He's had a pretty good year in AAA, and I really do like the improvements he's made. Last year, he hit 255 with 53 walks and 144 Ks. Now he's at 262 with 42 walks and 86 Ks. So he's picked up his walk rate. He's dipped his strikeout rate. He's improved. He was bad in AAA last year in 61 games. He's been really good in 84 games this year. But again, like you said, he's probably not coming up just till September. He just caught off the DL. He's probably going to kill you in average. I like him long term because he's got good power and a little bit of speed, and he's going to be hitting in a nice place, nice park or whatever. But I don't think he's going to provide any value this year. And Gary Sanchez, no. Like, he doesn't even have catcher eligibility. He's got, because he only played a couple games last year and it was at DH. So maybe in a couple weeks he has catcher eligibility, and then maybe he'll have some interest if you're desperate. But I think he's always been crazy overrated to begin with. And No, he's like Kendrys Morales right now, like a fair hitter who has DH eligibility. How excited are we going to get about this? Like, maybe, no, I don't like Gary Sanchez. I don't understand the love.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge for the rest of the year?
I feel like Sanchez is one of these guys that we've been waiting forever. I think, feel like, you know, like 3 years ago we were talking about Sanchez, but he's actually still only 23. So there's obviously a...
How is Aaron Judge older than Gary Sanchez?
I know, right? I'm sure 3 years ago I was hearing people talk about, should you pick up Gary Sanchez? And I'm like, hang on a minute. So I think, you know, there might be something there, but he does really need that catcher eligibility because, you know, a 20 home run guy at DH is not that exciting. So unless he suddenly becomes a 30 home run guy and you don't care about what position he's playing, I think you do really need him to play catcher a bit more, and it's unclear how often that's really going to happen, especially as McCann's still there. So I'm not hugely excited about Sanchez, at least for the immediate future. Judge, I think, you know, looks like he can be a really good player long term, but with him I have the strikeout concern. The flip side of what I talked about with Benintendi is that Judge has kind of struck out a quarter of the time at basically every level he's played in the minors, and I think he could really struggle with them again in his early play in the majors. So I think there's a lot to look forward to long term with Judge, but over the next couple of months I wouldn't be surprised if you see him struggle, especially in the batting average department.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on these two guys moving forward for the rest of this year?
Well, I've had a long history of what I find to be the Yankees wildly overrating their prospects. You know, this has happened for years on end with Jesus Montero, and you know, years before that, it happened over and over and over again. Nick, all the way back to Nick Johnson, and further back than that. I also don't trust them to have the long-term roles yet. You know, they can say whatever they want about rebuilding and this and that in the offseason when they have a lot of money. All these kids that are Yankees have tendencies to be stuck behind old fossils who are running around with canes and for some reason playing positions that they don't need to because they've got four DHs. So as far as I'm concerned, I know this is supposed to be a new era of Yankee baseball, but until they make it through an offseason and they don't block all their kids, I'm going to treat these guys as if they're going to get blocked. And Aaron Judge is, you know, had plenty of injury problems. There's been a lot of questions about his value to begin with. You rarely run into a prospect analyst who believes that Gary Sanchez could catch his way out of a wet paper bag. So I'm finding it hard to believe that there's much to get excited about here.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, Chuck, in terms of their long-term future. Though I do agree with you guys in terms of their short-term future. I think short-term, I'm not really interested in any of them. Judge would be interesting to me a bit in like a head-to-head format that's deeper, especially one that doesn't penalize you for strikeouts for a playoff stretch run. Because I think he will be up in September. His bat at Yankee Stadium could be pretty interesting in terms of the power department. I worry about how big he is, not necessarily defensively, because from what I've read, he's actually really good defensively, considering he's 6'7", 230. I just worry about his contact rate and his strike zone, his ability to control a strike zone at that size, and him turning into a Kyle Blanks-type player. But I think he could offer a little bit of value towards the end of the season. Like I said, head-to-head categories, head-to-head formats for the playoff stretch run as a guy that, you know, could offer you cheap power off the bench in a deeper format. In terms of going forward, I understand what you're saying, Chuck, but this is an obvious plan, what they're doing. They are gearing up for the 2018 season. They're going after Harper. They're going after Jose Fernandez and Manny Machado, three guys who I believe are all free agents coming into the 2018 season. And so these guys will get a chance to play next year because they're not going to go out and spend money. They are saving all their eggs for that huge basket, and then they are going to attempt to turn back into the Yankees of the 90s and before.
You're making the assumption that when their season tickets drop off 30%, that they're not going to panic. There was a defined plan that they were going to get under the certain salary cap number, so they could stop paying such a high percentage of luxury tax money. That didn't happen. I don't trust the Yankees, and I still think, you know, by and large, the Yankees have brought up very little homegrown talent that has done anything. And I think Brian Cashman is wildly overrated right now for making one good trade at a trade deadline.
Well, they've got a ton of money coming off the books this year, even more money coming off the books next year.
I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, and I agree with you. That's exactly what they should do. And, and I don't think that Brian Cashman is a bad general manager. So I definitely think that he could definitely navigate this sort of plan that is being put out there. The question is, like I said, will they get impatient? Because I don't think that's a market that has a large, a large appetite for a middling team that's supposed to finish 10 or 15 games under 500.
And I understand that, but at the same time, I don't think Hal Steinbrenner and the other owners in the Steinbrenner family really care that much. They're making their money no matter what, and they've made a ton of money. So yeah, I don't think if ticket sales drop or anything like that. First of all, I don't think ticket sales are going to drop that much to begin with. It is Yankee Stadium, and second, I don't think they give a shit. I think they just want to win, and I think they've put together a good plan in order to do so. And I'm going to be very surprised if they go out and spend a ton of money on dopes next year.
Chuck, is there a GM that you don't want dead?
There's actually a few GMs that I think are underrated, but I think maybe it could be figured that it's jealousy, because if somebody asked me, you know, what my dream job was, that's definitely what it would be. So maybe that's more at play than anything else. It's just the ones that are insulated, like it's never Cashman's fault that they signed A-Rod. It's never Cashman's fault. That everything bad that happens in New York is not Cashman's fault. Anything that works is because Cashman's a genius. And I don't understand that. He's been the person who's been in charge of those drafts. And to me, they're not a very good drafting team. And they're very rarely ever towards the top of prospect charts. And they are now. So now maybe they'll figure out the value of it. And maybe they'll change their path going forward.
But the reason they're not at the top of prospect charts isn't because they're not necessarily... And they haven't drafted fantastically. But it's not because they're not drafting fantastically every year. It's because they trade away all those prospects to compete.
Yeah, by and large, that has been the tendency over a long stretch of time. At the same time, it just seems like some organizations are known for the depth of their drafts, and that you can bring people up in midseason and they really help you a lot. And I just between their development. You know, how bad everything went with Jabba Chamberlain, who was supposed to be a stud, you know, and some other names that I've mentioned already. I don't have the utmost faith in them. They have to prove otherwise to me that that they can go through a plan like this.
All right. Let's move on to another polarizing topic. That is Yasiel Puig of the Dodgers. I spoke briefly about him with Mike on the Wednesday podcast. I want to kind of get your guys' take on him in his 2017 value. He's been demoted. He was told to stay away from the team plane so he could either be traded or demoted. I want to know, is this a buy low opportunity to you, Darius?
I think if you're going to buy low, then this is the perfect time to do it. And I guess the question now is whether you think, A, that the Dodgers are going to either shift him somewhere or give him another chance to play full-time next year. And if that's, you know, if you still believe in his talent, he's obviously incredibly athletic and he's shown still flashes again, even this season when his overall line looks pretty bad of the talent we've seen in the past. So I think, yeah, if you're going to buy low, then do it now, because you might have to pay next to nothing, especially to a team who's contending and is looking for something to boost them right now, which they're obviously not going to get out of Puig. But I mean, who really knows what the hell is going on there with him? He's obviously not really got his head in the game, and there's something, even though he'd sort of started to improve of late, the Dodgers still don't really seem to want him on the team anymore, which they kind of in the past, they'd not really said that. They'd still kind of indicated they weren't going to trade him, and now it seems like they're pretty happy to get rid of him. So I have a lot of questions about his playing time and indeed, you know, whether he can get back to the levels he showed in his early seasons in the majors. But it's the perfect time to buy low if you still believe.
I personally still believe. I would like to buy low in the Dynasty and Keeper formats that I'm in, unfortunately. For me, in these formats, my trade deadlines have passed in a number of those leagues. And I think Eli owns him in the other. So, I mean, unless Eli really trashes him right now, though I'm about to say something that I think would boost up his value if Eli was willing to sell him. Since returning to the Dodgers on June 21st, I believe from the disabled list, he has hit 308, 390, 440. I mean, this is a guy with a ton of talent. I don't know what's happened, and I said this with Mike, like, something must have happened within the clubhouse to get him demoted like this.
Yeah, what a shocking development that would have been.
Yeah, I mean, something must have happened. That the media, which is weird because usually the media finds out these things, you know. Usually the media finds out when a player punches another player, when Avisel Garcia sleeps with Prince Fielder's wife, that something happens.
Wait, what?
You haven't heard this story?
No.
In the reason Avisel Garcia was traded off of off of the Tigers was he slept with Prince Fielder's wife.
Oh. at least he hit something. Hey-o.
Oh. Oh God, I need a second to recover from that. Usually we hear about these incidents. So I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been some sort of news coming out of why this has happened, because he's hit the ball well enough. And I mean, even with the Josh Reddick trade, he's still one of the three best outfielders. So it doesn't make a ton of sense to me that he was demoted unless something has happened. I'm personally willing to buy in on him because I think he is athletic. I think he is toolsy. I think he has all the talent in the world. And the majority of the problems are 50% in his head and then 50% made up by the media, by the team. I don't think, you know, as much as I give him shit, I don't think this is all his fault. You look at all the incidents he's been in, especially off the field, and they've all turned out to be nothing when the dust settled. You know, he supposedly got a DUI. Well, except for he wasn't drunk. He was just speeding and got a ticket. You know, he had a domestic violence issue, except for he didn't hit anybody and was never charged. You know, all these issues that seem to have popped up around him, you know, I'm sure there's part of it is his air of superiority, his ego and stuff like that. But I think part of it is manufactured and blown out of proportion by the media. So I think a change of scenery, especially if he were to get moved out of Los Angeles, would actually be very good for him, and I would love to buy in on him. Eli, what are your thoughts on Puig?
Look, I agree. He's young, he's talented, he's probably going to be traded, and a change of scenery would do him good. So you have to buy low. But that being said, this guy stinks. I'm sorry. he's never had 20 homers. He's never had 70 RBIs. He's never had 15 steals. He gets hurt all the time. He's got off-the-field stuff. Like, he's a head case. Like, I like him. I root for him. I still kind of believe in him. And like I said, you have to buy low in this guy. But he's hot garbage.
Chuck, any thoughts on Puig?
Yeah, I just... sort of going on a slant that along a slant that you have, but maybe in an opposite direction, is that everyone acts like Bryce Harper is some kind of bad boy and he's got all these issues, right? Well, I'm sorry. I mean, okay, he wasn't drunk when he got caught speeding. He was just going 70 miles over the speed limit. I mean, I find this really hard to believe in this fashion, okay? If all he needed was a change of scenery, and you can buy him right now for what? 30 cents on the dollar, you know, and nobody else seems to care about taking on money. You know, there's money, there's plenty of money in the game. So then why is nobody lining up to say, boy, we'd like to take a chance on this guy? And to me, that's because they look into it and what they see is more of the hot garbage that Eli is talking about than the young upside that you're talking about. You know, I hope he changes it, turns it around, because he's certainly not a player that should be in this situation. But at the same time, what, like 35% of all of his major league production was the first month he was in the league. And like after that, he's been, you know, this is one of his best stretches ever that he's having right now, besides the first month of the season. So, I mean, I will respect people who take, you know, a $1 or $2 gamble on him at the end of the draft next year. But if I forget to do that, I'm over it before it starts.
I'm going to disagree with, with kind of the reason why teams didn't go get him. I think the Dodgers wanted too much. I think they saw a you know, toolsy, talented guy in Puig that they still have under contract through 2018 for an extremely low price. You look at his contract for the next two seasons. He's owed $6.5 million next season, $7.5 million in 2018. And I think that the teams that were interested in him didn't want to give up a ton to go get him. And I think what the Dodgers wanted was major league assets that could help him now and probably way too much So I think that's probably the reason he didn't get traded. And I mean, that's obviously speculation, as is a lot of the stuff we're talking about in this conversation. But I think there's no way that he gets put on waivers and isn't moved for a fortune, you know, because every team is going to put a claim on Yasiel Puig, I think, if he gets put on waivers.
I think that's probably not the case, just because I think there's some teams that have a very low tolerance for the kind of tomfoolery that could conceivably come along with picking him up. I completely agree talent-wise. I mean, you know, the guy's got an arm that looks almost like it's made up. It looks like it's fake.
I'm just going to stop you real quick, Chuck, because I mean, here's my thing, and this is something that I've said recently on another podcast. I can't remember if it was on baseball or football. But if Yasiel Puig was white, we would not be having these conversations.
Oh.
And I mean, let's be honest. You brought up Bryce Harper and his antics. We've had Jonathan Papelbon choke someone and get a job. We have all sorts of problems with white athletes, but Yasiel Puig doesn't get the benefit of the doubt because he is a dark-skinned man. I think, and I'm not saying that you or anybody else on this podcast is making a, you know, giving him shit more because he's of a different color. I'm talking about the media in general, fans in general. I think he gets a bad rap because I don't think he does anything worse than a hell of a lot of other guys.
Well, I think it is a factor. To be honest with you, I completely appreciate the fact that you're willing to express how much of a factor it is, because a lot of times you just don't talk about it, even if you think it, just because you're afraid, you know, of some sort of political correctness police or something like that. I mean, I do think it's a factor. I don't deny that for a second. I don't think it's as big a factor as you're making it, but I think it's
could
a
you
factor.
Imagine if Yasiel Puig did what Joey Votto did in the Reds game yesterday? And for those who don't know what Joey Votto did, Joey Votto went to go catch a foul ball, and one of the fans of his, a Cincinnati Reds fan, got in the way. He then yelled at the fan, grabbed his shirt to pull the emblem into his face and show him, "Hey, you're on my team here. You're supposed to get out of my way." Could you imagine what the blowout would have been if Yasiel Puig did? And the fallout for Joey Votto becomes, well, Joey Votto handled that really well afterwards because he gave him a signed ball.
The fact that you preface this by saying, for those who don't know, and a lot of people listening probably didn't know, the fact that you didn't know kind of proves your point, Justin. Like, if Puig had done it, you would know.
I don't deny that for even a second. But I do think how first impressions, you know, matter a lot. And the fact that he's in LA puts an extra microscope on him as well. I'm not disagreeing that exactly what you're saying is definitely a factor. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I think it's less of a factor than you're making it. There's a lot of people been given a lot of free passes that are every color and ethnicity. It depends a lot on how you come off at first. And if you do things that help that spotlight get towards you. I mean, and that's one of the things that's happened to Harper. I mean, his stuff in the media and what have you, he's a really religious guy. I follow him on Twitter. He's highly religious. He's, you know, he's never really done anything wrong, but people have this image of Bryce Harper that he's a bad boy, and he's white. I mean, as white as they can be. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't think it's the only factor at play here. I think getting caught, you know, going 70 to 100 miles an hour over the speed limit, you know, didn't help him. I think, you know, the dumb base running stuff that he did, everything is coagulated into one thing. And nothing is as bad. What you're really right about is nothing is as bad as it's been portrayed. But at the same time, there's definitely always been this little circus going on around him. And I think the first impression leads to a lasting impression unfairly.
Can we give Chuck props for using the best word in the history of this podcast? Coagulated.
I'll let Darius have the last word if he wants to say anything else. I mean, because I could argue about this for another hour, and it would be unfair for the listeners who are actually listening for fantasy advice and not listening for my social commentary. So Darius, if you want last word on this, go ahead. If not, I'll move on.
I mean, I agree with you that, you know, Puig is unfairly treated in a lot of ways because of the color of his skin and, you know, his background. I think, sadly, that's probably the case that not necessarily all of the front offices involved in maybe deciding whether to make a claim for him would be devoid of those prejudices. So I can't say for certain that everybody would go after him, even given that, you know, we know that they shouldn't be taking that into consideration. I think to wrap it up on the player front, you know, he's a very talented player and it's a great time to go and get him. So if you can get somebody to give him to you because they've given up on him, then this is the time to do it.
Let's talk Carlos Rodon.
Yeah.
Let's talk Carlos Rodon, then Max Kepler, and then we'll wrap it up. Let's try to keep it a little bit brief. Eli, White Sox, Carlos Rodon, what you think?
He frustrates me. He's obviously so talented, and I think that Don Cooper is going to work his magic with him. It just may take a little bit of time. The strikeout rate's still solid, but it's not up from last year. I do like that the walk rate's down from last year, but there's still way too many walks. He's been getting a little unlucky. The BABIP's 351, and a homer to fly ball has gone way up from last year. There's a lot to like, but I just still think it's going to be a year or two before this guy is a consistent, reliable fantasy option. He's certainly got the potential to be a stud down the road, but I think you got to be patient with him.
Chuck, what is your thoughts on Carlos Rodon rest of the season and then moving forward into next year?
Well, I think we want to, you know, we want to pretend like we can take as much luck out of this game as we possibly can, the game of fantasy baseball. But at some level, you can't. And I think Rodon is going to be one of those really overly talented guys that's going to get taken in this area in the draft next year where, you know, you're going to have the Dylan Bundys and the Kevin Gausmans and, you know, these guys who, if they put it all together, are going to be unbelievable. And hitting or missing on those guys is a huge factor in our game. I think Rodon has been a little wilder than I prefer to gamble on. So I think his issues are a little bit deeper. So I would probably put him at the bottom of that group of unknowns with an immense amount of talent.
Yeah, what a whip killer this guy is. God damn.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Rodon moving forward?
Well, Rodon was the one of the first starting pitchers I saw when I came over to California, and it seems like he hasn't really ironed out the problems that he was having in that first start of the season, which is his control. He seems to fall behind in the count so often because he isn't hitting his spots. And he's got some just incredible stuff. That slider is so nasty. But until he starts being able to throw those pitches where he wants a little bit more often, I think his first strike percentage is barely over 50. So almost half the time he's behind in the count straight away. I think we're going to be, you know, cursing him as a whip killer for a season or two yet. And maybe he can figure it out. And when he does, I think he'll be close to a top tier starter. But at the moment, he's still battling with that. And it remains to be seen whether he can really get over it.
I have faith that at some point he's going to put it together. I don't think he's going to be the elite starter necessarily that a lot of us expected, because I do think that walks are always going to be an issue for him. But I have faith he'll get the strikeout rate back up, that he'll be able to limit enough walks and enough home runs to be useful. I think he's been, well, I mean, even though he's been unlucky, it's not like he's been amazing or anything. But I mean, his XFIP and his Sierra are show a little bit better of a number than what we see in his ERA and WHIP. He's been pretty unlucky, it seems, in the BABIP department as well. I think there is a strong possibility that he could take a step forward. Sometimes these guys take a little bit of time to kind of get going. I think he's a guy that I would love to take a shot on as one of my last few spots in my rotation next season in redraft leagues, and a guy worth trying to buy low on in dynasty and keeper leagues. Let's talk about Max Kepler before we wrap up. Another guy that I briefly talked about with Mike on the Wednesday podcast, but I kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts on him in terms of where you see him being drafted for next season. Especially with the recent power spike. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Max Kepler for next year?
Well, I think he's going to be highly valued. The power surge is something no one was expecting. I never heard a prospect analyst ever say that he was going to be more than like a fourth outfielder. Well, if he can hit for any form of the power that we've seen so far, that obviously is underselling him a great deal. I think outfield is top heavy, but there's not a ton of depth. I think he's going to be very, very much, to put it in a Darius term, he'll be very fancied in the in that second tier of outfielders. once you get outside the top, 14, 15 outfielders, you're going to have people who are going to want to take chance on the upside, and that maybe this power just came to fruition at the right time.
Chuck, I would like you to go read some of my articles on FanGraphs where I talked about Max Kepler and his power potential that was coming eventually. So to say that no one was on him, I was hugely on this guy.
well, I just remember, I remember everyone said that James Loney's power was going to come too. I mean, and I don't mean that in a bad way towards you or your article, because I would never mean it that way. I'm just saying that we talk about a lot of guys' power potential, and sometimes it comes and sometimes it doesn't.
I'm just saying, I was on this guy. Come on. I've loved Kepler for a while. I've always thought he was much more than a fourth outfielder. Though you're right, a lot of people did think he was a fourth outfielder. He got a little bit underrated because he was coming from Germany. He started playing baseball much later than most people do. So he was very, very raw coming over to the United States. So he's a guy I've really liked. I talked about where I think he will go in terms of drafts for next season. I think there's a chance that if this power stroke and hot streak continues for too long, though, he is going to end up getting overrated for next year. So that would be my one concern, but I do love Max Kepler moving forward. Eli, what are your thoughts on Kepler?
Yeah, I'm in love. He's just a really good hitter, man. All these homers he's been hitting lately, they're all over the zone. He's got great range. He can hit away. I just love it. He can hit anywhere in the zone. He walks a lot. He doesn't strike out a ton. He's got a little bit of speed. I think the Minnesota lineup could be pretty good next year, so the runs and RBIs that tend to get overlooked are going to be pretty solid as well. I think there's just so much to like. He's getting better and better. I think this is just a special talent.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Kepler moving forward?
I'm a little concerned that this homer binge is going to make him overvalued next year. Is he already at 15 on the season now in less than 250 plate appearances? So it's getting a little crazy. I don't think he's got quite this much power. He doesn't have the kind of underlying exit velocity that I would expect from somebody with his kind of home run to flyball rate. I think he's sort of sitting in the Cruz Stanton range at the moment. But he's got a great swing, and he obviously has got the potential to hit a good amount of home runs. So if this doesn't push his value too high for next year, then I'm definitely going to be very interested. But I just have a little bit of worry that people are going to see these gaudy numbers and sort of what's going to be maybe two-thirds of a season and get a little bit overexcited.
Yeah, I think next year, and I think I said this with Mike, that he is I think he'll hit for a little bit better average. I think he'll hit maybe 20 to 25 home runs, but he also has some speed to his game, so I could see him stealing upwards of 10 bases. And we just haven't seen the speed yet translate at the major league level. He is a very good defender, so I think now that he's establishing himself, I think his playing time will be full time, so we won't have to worry about what we saw earlier in the season of him going up and down between the minors or him riding the bench and coming in as a defense replacement. I think he's cementing himself in that Twins outfield for years to come. I agree with you though, Darius. There is that little. This is the part of the year I hate in terms of for next season, because all these guys that I'm like I can't put them on my roster right now in redraft leagues for whatever reason. And I'm like, okay, just, don't break out yet because I want to invest, cheaply next year. This is the time in which if those guys really take off like Kepler is starting to, are going to overinflate their value for next year. All right, that is going to wrap us up. Chuck, tell me what you're working on and where people can reach you on Twitter.
I can be reached at just Chucking It on Twitter. I'm sort of starting the framework for another article for the website, which I would like to help support. A couple times I've heard I've rightfully heard Justin say that this is one of the best websites that very few people know about, and I certainly hope to help make that not be the case going forward, because it's a really good website.
Well, we appreciate that. Eli, what are you working on, and where can people reach you at?
Oh, was on mute. It was going to happen. Happens now. I am on Twitter at EliFWFB, and be sure to check out the Football Pack podcast, because we're going to be ramping that thing up big time moving forward.
This is true. Darius, tell people where you can reach and what you're working on.
I'm on Twitter at DariusA64. I've just had up this week a trade deadline piece, sort of looking at the major fantasy relevant players who got moved and what I think it does to their value. So go check that out.
Yeah, it was a great article. Always is. I got to retweet it out so that way my followers can find it easier. But you can always go to friendsoffantasybenefits.com to find Darius's work, Chuck's work, my football work. My baseball stuff typically is going over to FanGraphs and their fantasy side. You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Please give us a rate and review on iTunes. That definitely helps us out. Again, look up our sponsor, officialfantasyrings.com, for 20% off your purchase of a ring there. That will wrap us up. For Chuck, Eli, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.